Ravens back on the practice field preparing for their preseason week two matchup Saturday against the Dallas Cowboys at Dallas. And let's talk some football now as we head up to the Window Nation fan guest hotline. He's a Super Bowl winning former head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. It's Brian Billick who joins us courtesy of X-Tech Shoulder Pads. And Coach, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. I'm curious with the trend now where teams don't play a lot of their starters, much of their starters. How hard is it to glean things when you watch a preseason game like the Ravens game against the Colts on Thursday?
Well, it's difficult in the sense that whatever you're looking at in the team in totality, it gives you a chance to look at the good young players, which obviously is important. But obviously that's the priority, is getting to look at those young players. Less so, you know, getting the starters into shape or necessarily implementing some new things. So, yeah, taking too much out of any preseason game is probably a mistake outside of identifying, gee, the new young players we have, this guy looked good, that guy looked good. But that's just the way it has to be. That's why the head-to-head competition, the way teams practice against one another, that's almost as important as the preseason games now.
Well, Brian, expectations sky high for the Ravens again. They've had really good rosters with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. This might be the best one. But what has been missing for this team to get over the hump, to get to the Super Bowl and win it?
Well, I don't know if there's anything that you can identify as missing because they have a lot of great talent, yeah. Notwithstanding maybe the best offensive player in the league and have been very productive and defensively as well. So, you know, it's just a matter of bringing it together at the end of the year and in the playoffs against very good competition. You can't dismiss the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs obviously have been spectacular over the last couple of years. So it's also a factor of just the fact that, you know, okay, it's not something that the Ravens are missing. It's just that they're really good at a time when there's another team and another quarterback that's very good as well. But clearly they have all the pieces in place to make that same run this year and get along with obviously Kansas City and Buffalo. Those clearly, I think, are the best three teams in the AFC. And then just, you know, they're just that player two away of like they were against Kansas City with a drop pass on the goal line and the like. Obviously just need to make those plays and all of a sudden they find themselves in the Super Bowl.
Coach, you obviously understood the media and how to sort of play the media at times and the importance of sort of messaging, and you didn't shy away from bold proclamations. But for a rookie head coach like Brian Schottenheimer right now in Dallas, and Jerry Jones, you know, being Jerry, and every week it's he's feuding with this player or he's ripping guys because he says that he paid them and then they got hurt. And it's just sort of one thing after the other. How difficult do you think that can be for that staff and that town where expectations are always outsized with their best player, you know, having a hold in? Like, it seems like that's a lot to ask of a startup coaching staff.
Well, but that comes part and parcel with being the head coach and the staff of the Dallas Cowboys. It just is, simply because that is the unique dynamic. And Brian Schottenheimer's been around a long time. He understands that basically Jerry Jones is the head coach, okay? And now I just have to orchestrate. The players understand it. They live with it every day. Having your top player hold out is not unique to the Dallas Cowboys. Everybody has dealt with that in some form or fashion, and they will get through it. He'll come back at the beginning of the season. But the Dallas Cowboys and Brian Schottenheimer, he has to understand, and he knows going in, particularly having been there before, as they made the transition from McCarthy. I'm not getting a head coach's honeymoon, okay? That's not going to happen. You know, it could happen after 1 year, and it's okay, no, you're gone, because those are the expectations. And that's not, you know, that is a little unique to Dallas, but he understands that coming in. And the fact that they're so used to it, they're going to go out and perform. You know, they're a good football team. I don't know that they're the best team in the NFC. I don't even know that they're the best team in their division. So, that adds a layer of difficulty to it. But that's just the Dallas Cowboys, and you understand that when you become the head coach.
Talking with Brian Billick, it's Inside Access here on The Fan. Let's stay in the division, Brian. The Eagles Super Bowl champions, they're in that division, and they played the Commanders in the NFC title game. Also in that division, the Commanders added Deebo Samuel. Right now, Terry McLaurin's in the midst of a hold-in. What do you think of this Commanders team going into this year?
Well, it's all about Jaden Daniels Jalen Daniels, I should say. And he does he come back? And there's no reason to think that he's not going to be spectacular. The thing I always look for in that second year of a quarterback is now he's had a complete off season. Rather than last year, his off season was what? It was getting ready for the combine and then the draft and then the OTAs and learning the system and then coming on in a long season. Now he's had an entire off season to look at the film, learn from that, and say, okay, in this situation, I'm not going to do that again. Or, yes, I recognize what this is. I think there could be some huge improvement, not that there needs to be a lot with the year that he had, in terms of how he's going to perform. And, again, like Lamar, it's just a spectacular athlete, spectacular talent, and they're going to do, you know, adding Deebo Samuel is obviously a big pickup for them. They're going to be in the thick of it. I'm looking forward to them to have a really, really good year.
Caleb Williams also heading into his second season as quarterback of the Bears. A disappointing rookie season for Caleb. They went out, made a ton of additions this offseason. They're in a tough division, Brian, in the NFC North. But do you expect Caleb Williams and the Bears to take that step this year?
Well, just like I said about Jalen Daniels, yeah, we're going to find out. You know, he's had plenty of opportunities to start. He's had this entire offseason. They need to start fast. And you know, I've said it many, many times. Bill Walsh, the legendary Bill Walsh, felt like a quarterback. You're going to know whether a guy is the guy by about that 24th, 25th start, which is going to be midway to later part of the season. He's had enough starts now to make that next step to find out if, you know, that doesn't mean it can't happen before. Obviously, there's some great quarterbacks that have shown up even before, but we're going to find out about Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, because obviously it's going to take more than him. They're in a tough division, not the least of which is Minnesota, as you mentioned, Detroit as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge for him, and we're going to have to see if he's indeed going to take that next step. But that's the, you know, $64 million question. You got to, as we've said for many years, you take a quarterback in the first round, it's a 50-50 crapshoot whether he's going to be a player or not, and we're going to find out about Caleb Williams.
Coach, how interesting is the AFC West to you from a coaching perspective, where we've got Andy Reid, surefire Hall of Famer, we've got Pete Carroll and with his unique accomplishments, right? Lombardi Trophy, NCAA title. We've got Harbaugh and all that he's accomplished. And then Sean Payton, who I think is a Hall of Famer as well. Have you seen anything like that before? Like that division is just something else from a coaching standpoint.
It is, and they appear to have the quarterbacks as well. Clearly, yeah. In Kansas City and with the Chargers, it looks like the young man Nixon in Denver is going to be that way. We'll have to see what Pete Carroll does. And again, he's got the credentials to get the Raiders kind of back on track. So, yeah, it's a very interesting division, not the least of which it's got Kansas City in it, and they're going to challenge them. So, yeah, I think it's a division. Anytime we talk about rating the divisions, it really comes down to, well, okay, let's rate the quarterbacks.
Right.
Because that's what you're talking about. The AFC North is a perfect example of it, where you got Lamar, you have Burroughs, and then now you have to add into the equation Rodgers. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But it always comes down to what's the quarterback situation. And I think the AFC West is clearly, of all the AFC teams, I think they may be one of the deepest at proven quarterback play of anybody, you know, of any other division. So that makes it very, very competitive and changes the equation for a team like Kansas City. That, yeah, you look at it like, you know, we said Buffalo and Baltimore and Kansas City looks to be the best in the AFC. But now they seem to be in a division that's going to be much more competitive and make it tougher for them to you know, be that team coming out of the playoffs, or at least going into the playoffs, because of the quality of quarterback play and obviously the excellent coaches that you alluded to.
Coach, let's finish back in the Ravens division. I guess there's an old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. If you count Deshaun Watson, the Browns have five. Shador Sanders hurt his oblique today, so he's probably going to miss a little bit of time. And old friend of Baltimore, Joe Flacco, probably the week one starter. But what do you think about what's going on in Cleveland?
Well, it's Cleveland, right? I mean, you're right. You'll say if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. If you have five quarterbacks, you're pretty screwed up. I mean, it's tough to – and the hard part is how do they, during the course of practice and preseason games, get the looks that they need to make the decision who's going to be that guy. And so they took their shot, obviously, with Deshaun Watson, with the obvious results. Kevin Stefanski's a good coach. They play good defense, but that's the challenge for them because of the long history of the lack of good quarterback play. That's what everybody's waiting for the other shoe to drop to see if they can indeed step in and be that. Because if they can get good quarterback play, then they're going to be right there and competitive with Lamar and Baltimore, with Burroughs and Cincinnati, and obviously with Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh. So that's really, and they got to decide quickly because, and if they haven't already, mm-hmm. because you can't legitimately evaluate and get five guys ready.
Coach Brian Billick, before we let you go, let everyone know about X-Tech Shoulder Pads.
Yeah, 14th season. Very proud of it. Wow. You know, it's been one of those things to watch this thing grow to be the number one pad in all of pro football. Players like Josh Allen, Justin Jefferson, Fred Warner, Josh Jacobs are wearing it. And now into the colleges, where we're the number one pad in all of the major college football and even top high school. So it's exciting to see this thing filtered down. We're excited about launching the youth pads going into next year. It's 100% American made. Obviously encouraging to see parents get involved. You go to xtechpads.com. You see what these pads are about. You see how they're made. 100% American made. You can't hold and touch and feel the pads and not see that this is the superior pad that people ought to be in. And the great thing now is, we've got 14 years of data. It's almost like they're form-fitted pads. The pads you get are based on your height, your weight, your playing position, your injury history, the level of play. We've got all the data, particularly in the AI-driven and data-driven world that we have right now, to put our players in the best protection possible. Parents need to check out xtechpads.com.
Another football season upon us. Always great talking with you, Brian Billick. We appreciate your
time. Thank you, Coach.
All right, look forward to it.
Coming up next here on the program, let's get back to the Ravens. And Monk teased some possible kind of pony packages with this offense. What new things can we see, new wrinkles could we see from this Ravens offense? Give you our thoughts next here on The Fan. Ravens on the practice field today as they're getting ready for their game Saturday against the Dallas Cowboys. By the way, Tim Murray's going to join us at 3:30 with some best bets. But Ravens and the offense, and obviously this is as good an offense as there is in all of football. You had a quarterback who should have won his third MVP. But what kind of wrinkles in year three do you think Monk can add to this thing to really stress a defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked a little about pony packages in the past ourselves and sort of, you know, groveling for them a little bit. The fact now that you've got Monk talking about it and talking about it this early in the season, that's promising. That's interesting. I'd like to see what that looks like. And you've got various iterations of that. We'd think that's a way to get Keaton Mitchell on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, is it Keaton with Justice? Is it Keaton with Derrick Henry? You know, where does DeAndre Hopkins fit into this and what does that look like? You know, another way to get Keaton Mitchell on the field is to put him in the slot. And I know we could already say that they've got a lot of options to throw the ball to, and they do. But, like, that's an interesting matchup problem. They can get really small. Like, you could have him and Zay Flowers on the slot on either side of either side of center, and you could still have big people on the football field like Derrick Henry and Pat Ricard. And how does a defense honor all that? How does a defense respect all that? Like, you could run out of that. You could throw out of that. You could throw to a little person or you could throw to a big person out of that. Like, stuff like that, I'll be interested in seeing. Now, again, you take a running back with a unique skill set. You put them there. Somebody else isn't on the field. Maybe that's Bateman. You know, maybe that's D-Hop, whatever. Especially if Likely does miss a few weeks. I think that, honestly, I don't want to say blessing in disguise because Isaiah Likely is one of their best football players, and you'd like to see him on the football field as much as possible. But let's say he misses a couple of weeks, and let's say Keaton Mitchell is tuned up and ready to go. Do they use that to get a look-see at some things that otherwise might have been stuck on the chopping room floor?
I think the two personnel groups that I would bet we see an uptick for, 11 personnel, which you brought up with three wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins is a huge upgrade over Nelson Aguilar, and I think that he's going to play that role well. And then it's those pony packages. And I asked Todd Monken about it yesterday when I was out at the castle, and he kind of lit up with it because you have three running backs with unique skill sets. And Justice Hill was a perfect backup running back to Derrick Henry last year. We know he's such a great pass protector. He can catch passes out of the backfield. Derrick Henry's just a freak of nature, speaks for himself. And then Keaton Mitchell is back to closer to what his 2023 form is. You can mix and match those three running backs, and you can really put stress on opposing defenses given those different type of skill sets. And look, then when Likely gets back, you know that you can play him pretty much anywhere, whether it's in line or slot or out wide. Like, you have a lot of unique talents on this offense, and it's going to be different types of looks every single week depending on the matchup.
Are we going to be going back to the future in a sense that, like, assuming health, do we find ourselves on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after the games begging for more Keaton Mitchell touches?
No. Because at the expense of whom?
That is the problem. But
if we're there, then that means there's the injuries or some stuff is falling off a cliff. Like, I'm talking about a cherry on top. Talking about, you know, a snap every other week in a pony package, or if it starts being effective, a couple of snaps a week, assuming they're playing 70, 75 offensive snaps. I'm clamoring for a diversionary tactic here or there to keep him feeling involved and set him up for an easy catch off a wheel route or something like that. No, I think they showed last year that they can shapeshift by design based on who they're playing and what the strengths of that team is. And they can gut you in a lot of different ways. And I still think, in general, them running with little people on the field and throwing with big people on the field and throwing deep with big people on the field, I think that's going to be a real headache for defenses.
So let me ask you this, and assuming health, obviously, when Isaiah Likely comes back, one of the things they haven't been able to do is get Likely and Andrews going at the same time. And again, we're nitpicking because the offense is so good. Is that something that we may see this year?
I mean, we may see it, but I'm not going to like sit here like we have in summers before and say I aspire for it, or they should be championing that, or that should be like, no, it hasn't happened yet. I don't think that they're ever going to play with each other beyond this year. So if it doesn't happen this year, you know, it's no skin off my knee. Again, Todd Monken knows how to put people in positions to win matchups, and Lamar knows how to survey the field and find those matchups. And there's going to be plenty of mouths to feed, and I think plenty of balls to go around, because I think they might run the ball a little less than they did last year. And maybe they don't have as many blowout wins as they did last year. So I don't know about you. I really don't care if they go off together or not. It doesn't do much for me anymore.
Ultimately, it's not as big of a talking point as it has been in years past. They're coming off a historically significant year offensively, and that was with Andrews and Likely not going off at the same time. So as long as they're a productive offense.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? That's where we're that's what I was sort of getting at. That's where we're at with this offense. It's so good. They're not dependent on anything as long as they're healthy.
I always go back to that Jesse Bates quote, 2020, it's 89 and 15.
Yeah.
That's it. It's a long way from that.
89 is in his last year here, and 15 can't stay healthy anywhere.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Coming up next, man, football season is rapidly approaching, which means I'm sure Tim Murray's got some interesting future bets up his sleeve. Best bets with Tim Murray from VSiN next here on The Fan. Before we get to Tim, 410-583-1057, you want four tickets to the Maryland State Fair? Call Beltway Ben, 410-583-1057. You win four tickets to the Maryland State Fair. But let's get our best bets now with our friend, IA Hall of Famer, Tim Murray from VSiN. And Tim, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. College football is, we're talking about the NFL being close. Well, college football is even closer. And you were telling us in our group chat there's a big line move in the Notre Dame-Miami game?
We did, yeah. So not line for the spread. The spread still hangs around 2.5, but a big move to the under this week. And I was talking about it over the weekend on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. A program that won Jason Lock and Fora joined me on Sunday.
Anytime, brother. Anytime. Yes. Thank you.
We had a little home and home there. I like it. But I gave it out on that particular show. It was 53.5 at the time. I did not move the line because I got a text message on Monday from someone who does have influence in the market. And he said, hey, have you bet the under yet? Because this thing's about to move. And we're down to 51, 50.5. So one of the biggest moves of week zero and week one is this total. And I understand it. You know, Notre Dame's strength this year is going to be their defense. And when you look at their secondary, when you look at their linebackers, I think they have maybe the best secondary in the country, even with the loss of Benjamin Morrison at cornerback, because Leonard Moore stepped in when he got hurt and was tremendous. They do lose Xavier Watts, but they added some pieces via the portal. Their linebackers should be very stout. And, you know, Miami's got a lot of inexperience at the wide receiver position. On the flip side, Notre Dame offensively, guys, they've got great running backs in Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, a great offensive line, but questions at the quarterback position. We don't know who the starter's going to be, and whoever it is, whether it be C.J. Carr or Kenny Minchie, it will be their first career start on the road in a pretty challenging environment. It'll be hot as hell down there in Miami. I'll be in attendance, and the last time Notre Dame played at Miami, not in the Hard Rock Stadium because they played there in the Orange Bowl this past January. The last time they played Miami at Miami, it was a hornet's nest. They were all fired up for it, and Mark Richt was the coach. So I think this is a more of a close-to-the-vest type of game, defensive battle. I don't like recommending bets now that you've seen a move about 4 points, but I agree with the move in this one, and I think it'll be a lower-scoring affair on Sunday of Labor Day weekend.
Now is definitely a good time to get your futures in for the NFL and college football. Some more props populating NFL-wise. But, Tim, you have a NFL college football parlay future. What is it?
Yeah, so, Tim, I'm at the point in the off-season here, or, yeah, preseason, off-season. I'm getting bored, and I want to start firing on more bets, but I hate betting on things that I don't like the number. So I did this last year with, it was Oregon to make the playoff with the Eagles to win the NFC East. I think I got it around like plus 130, something like that. So I've done it again. I've got a cross prop that you could bet right now at FanDuel. I've got Alabama to make the playoff crossed with the Bills to win the AFC East. I know everyone loves the Patriots and their win total's gone.
Bills are winning this division.
You look around the betting market, there is numbers as high as like minus 375 on the Bills to win the division. FanDuel, pretty reasonably priced at minus 280 right now. You pair that up with Alabama at around minus one. I think FanDuel was minus 188. We're looking at plus 109. So obviously, when you make a parlay, and I tend to say parlays are for suckers, and I tend to agree with that, but I really like this Alabama team, guys. And they, similarly to Notre Dame and a lot of these teams in the top 10 of the country, they've got question marks at quarterback. They have announced that Ty Simpson will be the starter. He is a former five-star recruit. I'm a big believer in what Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb, their offensive coordinator, are able to get out of quarterbacks. We've seen it numerous stops. Michael Penix Jr. when he was at Washington most recently, when you think back to Jake Haener at Fresno State. So I think you're going to get really good play out of Ty Simpson. I think the defense is dynamite there for Alabama. There are some speed bumps potentially on this schedule, but I think Alabama is a 10-2 football team. If you're 10-2 coming out of the SEC, you're making the playoffs. So I think Alabama, I think the ceiling is national championship for Bama, but I you could certainly lay the minus 180, which is out there for them to make the playoff, but I made it a little more palatable from a juice standpoint. Got plus 109, Alabama to make the playoff, and Bills to win the AFC East.
All right, well, let's delve a little deeper into college football playoff markets. You're, as you said, you don't always love the numbers because you have certain things in mind with value, especially if you're looking at a futures play that they're going to hold your money for six mm-hmm. months until you get it back. Anybody who you think outside the norm could crack this playoff equation?
Yeah, so everyone's going to ask the question, right, this time of year, hey, who's going to be the Indiana?
Right.
Easy answer is no one. Yeah. Indiana, you know, new coaching staff, win total 5.5. They were as high as 100-1, I think even 200-1 in some shops, to make the playoff last year was just insane. We're not getting that again. I think the books have adjusted. You know, could we get a 50-1? Yeah, certainly anything's possible, especially a G5 team. But someone right around 10-1 is someone that I put a little sprinkle on, a little long shot to make the playoff. And that's the Washington Huskies. Look, they've got a big spot coming to the old snake pit later on in the season,
hey,
coming
Tim,
off of a game against Ohio State.
I just hope you know, Terps Family Weekend, that is the opponent. So they're going into
saying.
A hornet's nest. They got to come to College Park
look,
on family weekend. Just
might be
so you know,
27,000
Just
strong.
So you know, October 4th. Well,
look,
I know four lock and fours will be there.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I did circle that game as a really tricky spot for Washington because they play Ohio State the week before at home, and it's your classic letdown spot traveling across the country to play a Maryland team. So hopefully, you know, for the sake of this bet, Washington beats Ohio State and maybe wins by one against Maryland so we can keep things alive. But look, I think, you know, at around, I bet it at plus 950. I think BetMGM has that plus 950 right now on Washington, anywhere north of 9-1. I look at the roster and I'll start with the head coach real quickly. I think Jed Fish is a tremendous head coach. What he was able to get out of those Arizona teams and the quarterback play he got from Jaden Delora and then Noah Fifita was really impressive. And then, to be honest, seeing the drop-off from Noah Fifita in his production raises my eyebrows a little bit. Damon Williams is a guy that I think you're going to know his name by the end of September. He is a dynamite athlete in the Sun Bowl, and I get it. It's a bowl game, but he was terrific in that game. It was his second career start. He started the regular season finale against Oregon. And I know it's coach speak, but man, when I talked to Jed Fish and he couldn't stop gushing about Damon Williams and what he brings to the table. So when you look at this schedule this year, there are certainly a lot of tricky spots. You got to play Ohio State. You got to go on the road to Michigan. You play Illinois, who's everyone's darling. You have to go to Camp Randall, even though I'm a little bit down on the Badgers this year, but you still have to go there. That's challenging. And you wrap up the season at home against Oregon. So it's a challenging schedule, no doubt. But if you're able to pull off an upset against Ohio State or Oregon, and then let's say go 2-1 against Illinois, Wisconsin, and Michigan, which once again is a challenge, but that's why this is a long shot bet. I think this Washington team has the potential to be a darling in college football this year and make it to the playoffs. So at around 10-1, a little bit less than that. They also added Ryan Walters, terrible head coach at Purdue, very good defensive mind when he was at Illinois. He's their new defensive coordinator because Belichick's son obviously followed down to North Carolina. So a little long shot late in the prep season. I threw it on Washington at around 10-1 to make the college football playoff.
Tim Murray, before we let you go quickly, any thoughts on Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer and his Venmo account?
Well, I mean, check out Arch Manning's Venmo account too. Hey now.
Oh, really? Look,
well, it's nothing gambling related.
Just interesting.
It's fascinating
headlines.
Yes,
I'll just say that.
Yeah.
You know, deny. This is what I said. I was doing a radio show yesterday down with my buddy in Memphis, and I said I think he probably was gambling on the USC-UCLA game. My guess, and this is just an educated guess or just a hypothetical guess, whatever, however you want to define it. My guess is that he was with his buddies. They were watching the game, and they were like, I bet you USC's going to win. I bet you UCLA is going to win. I mean, inside joke to say sports gambling is a little weird. I also tip of the cap to whoever decided to go down the rabbit hole of looking at Venmo transactions. Did not know that was going to be part of our lives these
days. Keep them private.
I double checked mine. I'm like, are all mine private? Okay, all mine are private. But yeah, so I don't make too much of it. I think it was a kid doing something dumb and not thinking that this could get caught. I'll also say, hey, John Mateer, welcome to the SEC, buddy.
Yeah.
Because if you were still at Washington State, no one's finding this Venmo transaction. Yeah. So, look, John Mateer, I'll say this, guys. I think top five most polarizing player this year in college football could be John Mateer. People believe that this Oklahoma team is going to take a massive jump with him at the quarterback position. They were busy in the portal. I'll believe it when I see it. Like, he had some great numbers, but to me, the quarterback that I hitch my wagon to, guys, and I think we've talked about him on this show, that transferred from the Mountain West. Yes, Washington State, technically an independent, but played a Mountain West schedule a year ago. It's my guy, Devin Dampier. Same situation, goes with his offensive coordinator. So real quickly, I know you guys are up against the break, but Mateer comes with his OC in Arbuckle to Oklahoma. So there's no new language, right? There's no new nothing, right? So that's what people are excited about. And he's a tremendous athlete. Devin Dampier is doing the same thing. He's going from New Mexico to Utah. The difference is the Big 12 is easier than the SEC. And Devin Dampier is playing again behind one of the best offensive lines in the country. So I actually like Utah to win the Big 12 this year at 6-1, and I have a super long shot bet on Devin Dampier to win the Heisman Trophy at 100-1. I love the kid. I am enamored with him. And talk about week one line moves. Utah opened up as a 3.5-point favorite at UCLA week one. They're now a 6.5-point favorite week one against the Bruins out there in lovely LA.
Tim Murray lets people know what's going on at VSiN.
Yeah, you can check me out. Coming up in a little bit, we're doing a fantasy futures draft on VSiN, which
I've
is going to be
before.
Kind of.
I crushed it last year. Before
yeah, I don't. Season. We'll see. We'll see.
Destroyed
got any, CBS. Got any winners
line.
For me? Got any winners
crushed
for me?
Them. I haven't. I have to. I mean, we have to talk off air.
Division winners, over unders, stat leaders, and props. So those are the five categories.
Yeah, and we did it. It was weighted. You had to do a 3-unit play, a 2-unit play, a 1-unit play across all these different subdivisions.
Yeah, so we're doing that top of the hour. But check out the VSiN weekend morning. Look, you never know. Maybe Ken will pop on the show this year. I don't know. You never know. You never know who's going to jump on the show. You can catch that on Masson, too. And then wherever you get your podcast, the VSiN. The VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We'll have Bill Conley from ESPN on the show tomorrow. Nice. So looking forward to that.
Thanks, buddy. We'll chat next week.
All right. See you guys.
Coming up next, T-Bone time, TMI with TAM. What you got?
Well, we know that there are some upgrades coming to Camden Yards next year. The scoreboard, the nice fancy luxury suites.
That we paid for.
Upgrades.
That our tax money paid for. Not the billionaire himself.
But what's going on with the redevelopment around Oriole Park at Camden Yards? Pamela Wood and Andy Koska have an update on that. They, of course, work for the Baltimore Banner. We'll get into it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM. The floor is yours.
Well, Camden Yards is about to get a much-needed facelift over the next couple of off seasons. We already know that the scoreboard, the sound system, the fancy luxury suite going where the press box is now, club level, that's all on the docket this off season. But remember a couple of years ago when everything was going nuts. Oh my gosh, are the Orioles going to move? Which was never going to happen. The lease. And John Angelos at that time went with Wes Moore to Atlanta, which has the Battery, which is the live, work, play complex surrounding Atlanta's stadium.
In the suburbs.
In the suburbs. And there was nothing there before. Mm-hmm. And John Angelos really wanted to somehow replicate that in downtown Baltimore. And when they signed the lease in December 2023, it gave them a 4-year window for the team and the state to settle on this ground lease that would give the team the authority to build around the ballpark. But there's a soft deadline. This all courtesy of Pamela Wood. Andy Koska did a great piece for the Baltimore Banner yesterday. There's a checkpoint December 31st this year that requires a meeting of key parties if no lease has been signed. And direct quote from Katie Griggs, president of business operations for the Orioles in the piece. At this point, we haven't had any conversations about a ground lease. And David Rubenstein, apparently on NPR, September 2024, said that the ground lease might be completed in the not too distant future. And now it the MSA would have to sign off on the agreement, and Governor Wes Moore's office said the team has not submitted a redevelopment plan, but MSA and the Moore-Miller administration stand ready to begin engaging with the Orioles regarding their vision for redevelopment for the Camden Yards complex. And they can't access the full $600 million until they tack on the extra 15-year lease extension, which is contingent on this ground lease agreement. So with all that being said, it's going to sneak up on you, Ken, but we're only 4 months away, four and a half months away from this soft deadline of when they'd have to meet. And
they're on it.
I think it just kind of goes more hand in hand with this ownership group, you know, over the last year and a half, and things have been kind of falling by the wayside. And can they duplicate what Atlanta has? No. But can they do something redevelopment-wise around the stadium? I think so. And I think there's potential for that. And I think that would be really great for the city. And I'll admit it's a little disappointing that they haven't been proactive with this at all. The state and Governor Westmore's office saying that they haven't talked anything about this with 4.5 months to go.
They say it's a soft deadline, though, because I guess it's fungible. You could move it. You could alter it. You could agree to push it back. Look, I think there's far more that we don't know about this ownership group than we know. Is this a private equity guy who, I don't care where he's from, I don't care if he grew up here or not, that just did it as an investment, who thought he was buying something on the 1 yard line and he just had to nudge it across the goal and he'd be the mayor of the town, de facto mayor, and he'd be, you know, riding on in parades, and that the worth of the franchise would just continue to shoot through the roof because they won their first World Series since 83 and he could just be along for the ride. Like I don't know how stuck in this ownership group is about the things that seem to matter to Angelos, at least the things Angelos talked the most about, which wasn't baseball. It was stuff like this. I don't even know that they have the acumen to run a second-rate baseball team, let alone start redeveloping the area around the ballpark. Like, I don't even know that they're going to put the $600 million to use the right way. I'll tell you this. Those renderings that I saw at the club level are some of the most antiseptic hospital looking things I've ever seen in my life. Like, so you're going to tear out that beautiful press box to put in seating for the richest 1%. And then you're going to completely alter the scope of what the area around that seating looks like. I'll say this, the people who made this ballpark were pretty good at what they did.
Yep.
All I've seen these bozos do is move an outfield wall in and out and not upgrade the audio and not upgrade the sound. The video,
But Jason, like,
I can't give them the benefit of the doubt on anything. They better earn it soon.
Well, I'll say it again though. They can't access the full $600 million until this is agreed upon about the ground lease and extending the lease by 15 years. So to get all of that, they need to get on this.
Well, we got a soft deadline in December.
He's getting his scoreboard. He's getting his club level redone. He's getting his he's getting the press box torn out.
Yeah, it's fun times. And the team, don't worry, it's going to contend next year. Coming up next, Ravens, they're getting ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys on Saturday. But what about this offensive line? How do we think this offensive line looks as they're getting ready for week one? And what about the depth of the O-line? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.